Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
From the Times and the Sunday Times, this is The Story. I'm Manveen Rana. Last week, the NHS made a huge announcement.
The NHS has banned the use of puberty blockers for children who claim to have gender dysphoria.
The ban follows a public consultation and an independent review commissioned by the health service. The government has welcomed the ban as a landmark decision, but transgender youth charity Mermaids say it's deeply disappointing.
But the story behind that ban actually begins 5 years ago with an investigation from the Times.
When this investigation went on the front page of the Times back in April 2019, it was a really bizarre response to the story. I've never experienced it before, haven't experienced it since.
The story today, the 5 year road to a ban on puberty blockers.
My name's Lucy Bannerman. I'm a news reporter and feature writer at The Times, and I've been covering this story for about 5 or 6 years.
Lucy, the NHS has just made a really significant announcement on how it cares for patients with gender dysphoria. Just tell us what they've announced and how it'll change things.
Yes, this feels like a significant moment. Children who want to change gender will no longer be prescribed puberty blockers on the NHS. And these were landmark guidelines which were issued last week. Mm. And the NHS said the reason for this decision was because there was not enough evidence that these drugs are safe. And from now on, these controversial drugs known as puberty blockers will only be given as part of clinical trials.
And just explain for us, I mean, what are puberty blockers? What do they do exactly?
Puberty blockers, they suppress the release of sex hormones that cause sort of adult sex characteristics and that they cause the physical changes of puberty, such as breast development or the growth of facial hair. And they've been prescribed to hundreds of children under 16 on the NHS since 2011 at the Gender Identity Clinic run by the Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust in North London, which is known as GIDS.
GIDS at Tavistock. So yes. People will have heard Tavistock, but it's GIDS at Tavistock. They've been prescribing these drugs. So they stop the development, sexual development, in people who are about to hit puberty. Just tell us a bit about these drugs. I mean, where do they come from? How do they become such a phenomenon?
So puberty blockers have been used for some time. The licensed use is for children who start puberty abnormally early. And that's what they're licensed for. So, for example, if a young girl aged 7 starts periods, then you can imagine that's very distressing for a child who doesn't have the maturity to understand what that's all about. So they're used to keep that child in line with their peers, in sync with their peer group. Their off-label use is what's controversial here, because at the Gender Identity Clinic, they were being used on young people and children who were maybe confused about their gender identity. Some of these children were very distressed at the prospect of developing adult characteristics of a gender which they didn't want to be. So they were used as a way and the language was used often as a pause button to stop the development of these children while they worked through their issues.
So we should say, physically, they're not doing anything that is irreversible. It's just, it's holding them back.
Well, that's the issue. The answer is, we simply don't know. They were certainly presented as harmless, benign drugs that don't do any harm, but that's not true, because the fact is, there's not enough evidence to support those claims. We simply don't know. There's not enough evidence behind these drugs to know what the long-term outcomes are. And there is some suggestion that these drugs can have long-term impacts on the physical, emotional, and psychosocial development of these young people. There's some concern over what it does to brain development and cognitive development. There's some concern over what it does to the bones and whether it actually weakens bones. I spoke to one young person who'd been on these drugs for 4 years and said they'd never broken as many bones as they did when they were on these puberty blockers. And gosh, also, just if you think widely about beyond the immediate physical impact of them, when you take a child out of their development for 4 or 5 years, in those formative years, and they watch their peers develop without them, then of course that's going to have an impact. You can't undo that. It wasn't until I was speaking to people who'd actually been on these puberty blockers that I really understood the implications of what was happening. So, for example, I spoke to one young person who was on puberty blockers from the age of 12 to 16. And hormone blockers do what they say. They block hormones. So this young person told me that while her friends were all beginning their first romantic relationships, this young person didn't have any feelings of sexual attraction because it was blocked. So it means that they can't explore whether they're actually simply gay and they're coming to terms with their sexuality. It prevents them from exploring that part of it, from exploring their sexuality, because it stops their sexuality. I think that's a really important thing that doesn't come out enough in the reports. And I think if you mess with that at your peril, surely.
And what would normally happen to them after 4 or 5 years on these puberty blockers? What happens at the end of that period? I mean, do they suddenly accelerate into puberty, or are they given different drugs?
Again, the kids' thinking behind this was that the drugs, in their view, were theoretically reversible. So the idea was that as soon as you stop taking them, then your body's sort of normal development kicks in again and it plays catch up and it begins puberty, albeit a later date. What the figures showed, that almost every one of the children who were given puberty blockers at GIDS then went on to take the cross-sex hormones once they were legally able to. And these are the much stronger drugs, the serious drugs that are irreversible and can even lead to infertility.
And when you spoke to some of the people who'd been on puberty blockers, did any of them have a positive experience of it? Did any of them find it helped them?
It's difficult to answer that question, because one of the shocking things about this is that GIDS didn't keep a proper record of what happened to all the children it treated. Now, this for me is the most astonishing thing. If you are setting yourself up as a clinic at the forefront of this newly emerging, sort of poorly understood area of medicine, and you were giving these drugs to these children, aware that there's a lot of criticism that it's experimental, but you're absolutely convinced that you're doing the right thing and it's for the well-being of these children, surely you would want the evidence to back that up. And when you start giving these kids these drugs, you would want to know later down the line, has it worked or not? Have these drugs made you happier? Have they help solve some of the issues that we hope they would solve? And the most bewildering thing is that once these children left the support of GIDS and they went on into the adult system, this clinic just lost track of them.
Wow, there are no records of what happens next.
There's very little record of what actually happened and the long-term outcome of these drugs.
And Lucy, you know, as you said at the start, this is a story you've been following for a very long time, for 4 or 5 years. And actually, you know, you could probably draw a line from your reporting 5 years ago that sort of started a lot of the coverage on this to the decision that the NHS has taken now. Just take us back to when it all began.
Back in 2019, I was doing a lot of stories around this fault line of identity politics, and sources were telling me about concerns within the GIDS service among many senior clinicians about the way that these children were being prescribed puberty blockers. What a lot of the clinicians felt was on the basis of very poor evidence.
Mm.
And I was interested because a lot of the language of those who are promoting the use of puberty blockers, it sounded very cavalier, that they were sort of playing fast and loose with this idea of fertility. And that struck me because at the time I was, as a woman in her late 30s, I was going through my own fertility issues. And I'd had a miscarriage, I'd had an ectopic pregnancy, which nearly killed me. My fallopian tube exploded and I nearly bled to death. And then I was going through IVF. And I became pregnant with twins. And so I was going to the hospital and like having scans and being told exactly how many eggs I had in reserve and what my chances of having another child would be. And that was sort of all consuming in my private life. And then I was hearing why, you know, these drugs, they'll be fine. Don't worry. You know, you can take them. It's a pause button and then you'll be able to go on and have kids later. And I just thought that kind of reckless discussion around such powerful drugs that we simply don't know enough about, that made me concerned about these teenagers and what their fertility might look like in the future.
Is that what drove you to look into this?
Partly, and also just journalistic curiosity. I think there was an element of the fact that a lot of these clinicians at the time, they were so concerned, but they really felt they couldn't speak out about it. They were terrified of speaking to a journalist. And I know others had tried, you know, there had been many attempts, and I had tried a few times to try and get some of them to talk about what was really happening and what their concerns were. And it took a long time to persuade people to have trust in me and to speak about what they were worried about.
And what were you hearing from clinicians? And were these all clinicians within the same clinic?
Well, at the time, and for a long time, GIDS had been talked of as the absolute leader in this very controversial area of medicine. And this clinic was revered as the country's centre of expertise in this area. So when I started speaking to clinicians who were speaking to me off the record, it was interesting because a lot of the ones who first spoke to me, they themselves were gay. And they were becoming increasingly worried by the children and young people who were coming into their consultations. And they felt often that they could recognise their younger selves in some of these children. And we should say there's children with all different histories, and there was a variety of young people who were coming in for consultations. But they said they were particularly worried about children who may possibly be coming to terms with their sexuality, but who were being medicalized and who were being sent down this medical pathway without, the clinicians felt, without the proper scrutiny of other things that might be at the root of their unhappiness or their distress.
And were these clinicians not able to raise that when they were seeing these patients?
It became very divided within the clinic, and there was a culture where they felt they couldn't speak out about it. And there ended up being quite a division between clinicians who had different views in this area.
And in the meantime, this was becoming more and more common, wasn't it? The use of GIDS.
Yes. Previously, you know, back in 2010, for example, there were only 94 referrals to GIDS. This had previously been a very specialised and very niche service. But by 2019, when I was doing my investigation, there were more than 2,500. So there'd been a huge spike in the space of a decade. The profile of those referrals changed. Previously, it had been mainly younger males, and suddenly the majority of people who were being referred to GIDS were young females who were in distress. So they felt that possibly there might be some wider social issue going on, and there were a number of clinicians who were concerned that that wasn't being explored properly before children were being prescribed these drugs.
How did the clinic respond to you when you were putting out these pieces back in 2019?
At the time, in its response to our findings, the clinic said that it used puberty drugs whose long-term effects were known and insisted that its service was safe and that, quote, in the growing evidence internationally on the outcomes, there is little reported evidence of harm. In fact, there was very little reported evidence of anything. There simply wasn't enough evidence to say either way whether these drugs were safe or not.
And when you put those stories out, what kind of a response did you have from readers and from the public?
It was a really bizarre response to the story. I've never experienced it before, haven't experienced it since. Mm. But when this investigation went on the front page of the Times back in April 2019, in response, there was a small group of protesters who gathered outside our building complaining about it. They had placards, they were very angry. I also had, on social media, people were telling me to jump off a cliff. You know, none of these critics I noticed were sort of like tweeting me links to medical studies or anything like that. It was just the insults. They were just furious that this had been questioned. And I just remember thinking, why? Why should it be controversial for senior clinicians within the NHS to say that they're worried about experimental drugs being given to a vulnerable cohort of children? I wasn't at work on the day of this protest, but colleagues were showing me pictures of the people gathered outside. And I would have loved to have asked these people and just been interested, you know, what their experiences were of puberty blockers. Had any of them gone on these drugs? You know, they just seemed so angry that it was being questioned.
Did it put you off reporting on the subject?
No, not at all. It showed that we were on to something.
Coming up, what begins as a backlash soon spurns a court case, an investigation, and a fundamental overhaul of NHS guidelines. That's all in just a moment.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So Lucy, you were telling us about your investigation into the Gender Identity Development Service, GIDS, at the Tavistock Clinic in London about 5 years ago. We should say, though, I assume not everybody who was coming into the clinic who was being referred there was being put on puberty blockers. Like, I understand at the moment there's actually less than 100 people who are on puberty blockers.
That's because there's been a clampdown in the last few years. Back in 2020, there was a landmark court case in which the practices of GIDS were explored. Keira Bell was a young woman who'd started puberty blockers age 16, had gone on to cross-sex hormones and had a double mastectomy, which she later came to regret. And she took her case to the High Court. That was when we got a real sense into the data, into the numbers, or should I say the lack of them. Because what was astonishing in that court case was that, you know, three High Court judges were repeatedly asking GIDS, well, what are the figures for this? How many of the children who you've referred to the clinic for puberty blockers, how many of them have autism, for example? How many of them have had mental health diagnoses? And time again, the clinic couldn't answer these questions. And the reason was because they weren't properly recording them.
So were they screening for these things when people came in? Were they asking these questions or just not recording them?
I think there must have been discussions of it, but it seemed very inconsistent and the records seemed at best patchy. And again, it goes back to my previous point. Why wouldn't you record all of these things? Surely that's incredibly important. If you want to make your case for these drugs, then you should be paying attention to that. You should know how many of these children also have autism, how many of them have also gone through the care system. We know there's a disproportionate number of referrals to GIDS where the children have either had histories of trauma or abuse. A significant number have been in foster care, for example. A significant proportion also have autism. This should all be recorded properly and should be studied and scrutinised, and it wasn't.
I mean, that caused real shock when it came out in 2020. Your reporting had come before that, though. You'd already raised questions. How did that lead to the arrival of Dr. Hilary Cass? Tell us about Dr. Hilary Cass.
Dr. Hilary Cass is a retired paediatrician who was the head of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health. She was commissioned to investigate the state of healthcare services for young people who identified as transgender. And she did, I believe, the most comprehensive review of all the medical data in this field that there's been so far. She raised concerns about the lack of evidence on the long-term outcomes for puberty blockers. And she found, I quote, "gaps in the evidence base regarding all aspects of gender care for children and young people, from epidemiology through to assessment, diagnosis, support, counselling and treatment." She found gaps across everything.
And she this is again going back to that, the idea that there wasn't enough data, records not being kept.
Yeah. And she was very careful to reassure young people and their families, many of whom very distressed and who were, we should remember, there's such long waiting lists and so many of them were desperate to get support. And this is in light of the completely overstretched mental health services in the country at the moment. So she was very careful to reassure these people that her report was not to sort of close down treatment or to close avenues for them. She wanted to make sure that they got the best possible healthcare. And she found that the healthcare provided by GIDS wasn't up to scratch. And she made lots of recommendations, which included sort of breaking the monopoly of the GIDS clinic. And she suggested that there should be a much more holistic approach to treating children who express distress over their gender. And so, following on from her findings, the government have now sort of confirmed their previous intention to now ban puberty blockers in England.
So that's how we get last week's announcement.
And that's what led to last week's announcement, yes.
And what else happens now?
Well, on the 31st of March, GIDS will close down and it will be replaced by two new centres, one in London, one up in Liverpool. But there still remains uncertainty over what those centres are actually going to look like, what the care from now on will look like. I think it's not a case that all the previous concerns and divisions among staff have suddenly been solved. There remains conflicting views over how best to treat this vulnerable cohort of children and young people. So it remains to be seen exactly how the new service will be different from the previous service. But I think the main thing we should expect is that it won't necessarily treat children solely through the prism of gender, that hopefully other comorbidities, the wider circumstances of their lives and health and histories will be taken into account.
So just to clarify, will it be the same staff who get divided between these two institutions?
Exactly who will be working in those services remains unclear. We know that some staff who used to work at GIDS, some of them have migrated over to the private sector. We know, for example, one former member of staff, Dr. Aidan Kelly, he's one of several former GIDS staff who've now set up a private hormone clinic. Their clinic, Gender Plus, they don't provide puberty blockers, but they do provide these stronger cross-sex hormones. And that'll be where it gets interesting, is how many of these families and their young people, how many of them will look for these drugs elsewhere and where will they go? If they're not getting them on the NHS, are they going to be going to the private clinics? Are they going to be getting them online where there's even less, if any, regulation? That's something we're going to have to watch.
Lucy, for you, it's been, you know, 5 years really of following this story very closely. Standing back, what do you make of it all now?
It's been very interesting just watching the reaction to these stories and how some people are very reluctant to change their views on things as evidence changes. I think this should be a cautionary tale and a reminder to organisations to cut out all the noise. Surely the most important thing is just to be constantly looking at the evidence and looking at the facts. Scrutiny doesn't mean hatred. Scrutiny isn't bigotry. I think scrutiny kind of helps us all, and it helps you evolve, it helps you improve practice. And we should say there's so many people who were working in that clinic who were all united in their desire to do the best thing for these vulnerable, distressed children. I don't think there were people who worked there because they wanted to do any harm. It was precisely the opposite. But there was conflicting views on how best to support these children. So I think it's a cautionary tale as to what happens when people become polarised and maybe more prepared to listen to activists than the experts.
That was the news feature writer for The Times, Lucy Bannerman. And you can find all of Lucy's reporting stretching out over 5 years on the GIDS clinic at Tavistock by logging on to thetimes.co.uk with a subscription. This episode was produced by Taryn Siegel. The executive producer was Fiona Leach, and sound design and theme tune were by Mal Lasseto. If you have any thoughts on what you've just heard, do get in touch at thestory@thetimes.co.uk. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.